Good evening,
Collinsport, Cemetery Lane, Schooner Bay, Mockingbird Heights, Morning Glory Circle, and our guests at Ale House for February 2021. This is Daryl War, of course, for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows podcast, in the hopes of creating a relief series in radio drama format for the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows. However, it's been many years, and still not done, because of a lot of very, very complicated things that are very hard to understand. And now that I understand them, through HumaneTech.com, among many other educators and ethical technologists, I have come to realize that however many hundreds of listeners I have had over the years likely have not really understood much of anything I've ever said, nor why. Which makes it very difficult to create a new podcast, because who's going to understand what I am saying anyway? And then, as I was writing to one of my pen friends, who helped me escape the madness over the years, I thought, well, one of the things that I've been meaning to do, that I've had an urge to do, is focus on parts of the radio drama narrative that involve letter writing and sending mail. So in that way, we can kind of focus on that theme, which I find really important. It's a 20th century show that I'm putting together, not a 21st century, even though it's being produced in the 21st century, but the fiction and settings are mainly 20th century. So for mailing things and letters, we go back to episode 1. So Wadsworth arrives, and he says, "I am here in answer to your advertisement for valet. My name is Wadsworth." And Barnabas responds, "Oh, yes, I received your letter just this morning, evening, today. Won't you come in?" And as I've mentioned before, he's uncertain about when to say what time of day he received the letter, because it might give him away as a vampire, because in episode 1 he still is a vampire, as opposed to the pseudo-ex-vampire, where we're just not sure whether or not he's cured. And Barnabas, about the letter, or maybe beyond the letter, "I only know you from your references, which I found most secure. Your services at Hill House were exemplary. Seems you took care of 6 people and several deaths, or so I've heard." And of course, Wadsworth words it very carefully. "You take me by surprise, sir. I can speak of no deaths at Hill House while I was employed there." And then it's mentioned again, because Wadsworth asks, "Shall I get straight to work, sir?" And Barnabas says, "Yes, of course. You're fine with the terms laid out, as in your letter?" And he says, "Perfectly." Now, that's a good cutting corners, too, because then I don't have to write anything describing what those terms are. They've just come to the agreement because the letter already said so, and we don't have to see the letter. Now, I looked for episode 2, anything about letters or the mail, and I was not surprised not to find anything, but I have been a little bit surprised because I'm going through everything again. Episode 3, Mrs. Johnson mentions writing to Sophia Petrillo. I remembered it about, there was something about starting the pilot light, which would show that, you know, Mrs. Johnson writing to Sophia Petrillo, a younger one, in the 60s. When Sophia arrives, looking forward to a percolated cup of coffee as opposed to an instant one, and Mrs. Johnson sits down and says, "Well, you remember that Jeff Clark I wrote to you about?" And Sophia says, "Yes, and don't worry, I always use those pages to start the pilot light, so no one knows." So even though Mrs. Johnson is sending letters to Sophia Petrillo, Sophia is letting her know, "I burned them because I need to start the pilot light for the stove." So that assures her all the Collinwood secrets that you write to me about are safe with me, because they just get obliterated. And we do have something for episode 4, Captain Greg Gets Bent, the postcard, extra scene from my original script when I made this into a podcast and knew I had room to expand. The Roger and Elizabeth by the fireplace mail scene that I was getting better at. So after Tony and Carolyn take the semi-damaged painting of Captain Greg, because they're going to take it over to Sam Evans, there's a scene with Roger and Elizabeth in the drawing room. And he asks, "What have you got there?" And Elizabeth says, "A postcard from Victoria." "And how is our old governess doing?" he asks. "A shaky hand wrote this, I'm afraid. Postmark says Washington State, but I can't make out the city." And that was on purpose because episode 3, Sophia was calling a 1990s Twin Peaks from a 1960s Collinwood. And however that works, it's just the powers of Victoria Winters is involved in that
So in episode four, Elizabeth can't make out the city, but the city is Twin Peaks, or the town, or the village, or whatever it is. But I did look that up, what Roger says after she points out that it's from Washington State, to make sure that the Space Needle did exist in the 1960s. Actually, I didn't even go online for that. I had a copy of the National Geographic when that thing opens. The Space Needle and the, I think, World's Fair. So I still got that copy of National Geographic. So Roger says, likely went to go and investigate the Space Needle in Seattle. I hear that's quite a structure for fools without fear. And one of the reasons I felt Roger should say that is I had had the experience with Tito in Seattle of going up the Space Needle. My husband did not go up. Which was good because the elevator was so packed, Tito and I were at the very front of the window glass of the elevator. And it's like, you know, I could have done without seeing us rise that high, that quickly, in full color. In reality, I could have done without that. But you have a hard time closing your eyes. So after such an experience, and then getting into this, yeah, it was very easy to give Roger the line, I hear that's quite a structure for fools without fear. But anyway, yeah, Victoria and Peter did not go there, to my knowledge. It's just something that Roger was topical for him to say about her postcard. And of course, it's a very touching scene between brother and sister, which I'd learned to do by the time I reached episode 14. And for episode 5, Saving Pop, we do have another postcard in the Barnabas and Stokes scene. Stokes and Barnabas start with talking about Adam, later going on to Willie. Barnabas expresses, I see. I suppose with your astute and collegiate background, no other person would be better equipped to handle such an infantile personality. He's talking about Adam there. And Stokes says, as it turns out, my attempts at instruction did not go to waste. Indeed. Yes, I wanted to share with you this lovely picture postcard. And Barnabas is surprised, New York. Stokes says, according to both the postmark and the photo on the front. And Barnabas reads Adam's postcard. I have left Collinsport to pursue a career in cleansing agents. I thank you deeply for your patronage and assistance. I have changed my name and intend to live a fruitful life and discover who I am amongst these many oddly placed parts. Your grateful friend, A. And Stokes tells Barnabas, I presume you wondered. And Barnabas says, and perhaps I have, flourishing cardstock. It has certainly been a strange journey with that one. So we bypass a lot of the Adam stuff this way. And Stokes says about Adam, that one is precisely in question. He represents the allegory of the many within the one, as it were. And Barnabas expresses, that is an interesting metaphor to place upon him, and likely a very true one. Aren't we all placed from various parts, past and present? And then there's a little bit of Barnabas being happy to see Professor Stokes, basically, because he reminds him of Ben Stokes, which is the ancestor to Professor Stokes. Then Barnabas continues, and with that I feel the need to share my own little missive on the topic of hired help. Paper fluttering noise. Wincliffe? Who do you know there? Well, I suppose I could just read. Befuddled. No, I can't. And Barnabas says, yes, it's a bit like the print of a pussycat holding a Japanese brush. And Stokes says, Shodo indeed. If only Saseki's cat could talk, which pretty much gives away one of the books my husband and I were reading within the last decade, which is Soseki's I Am a Cat, three books. And of course, Barnabas doesn't know who Soseki is. And Stokes points out, Mr. Collins, really, you seem to be a man solely of antiquity, as though there is a gap of time you've missed. Because they're still playing along with, yeah, you're not the actual guy, you're just the descendant of the other guy. And Barnabas says, of course not. If nothing else, I certainly know who Dale Carnegie is. At any rate, you're holding the letter upside down. Oh my, well, yes, wait a second. If you hold it upside down, there appears to be an arrangement of letters written differently to create a secret message. Oh, can you decipher it? I believe I, yes, to be sure. Sure, in this town. And so then he's just, Stokes is struggling to read this letter from Willie Loomis. And then, of course, it's, two is a numeral. Be sure to what? Drink? And then Barnabas thinks, oh, he's gonna talk about that Willie is writing to him about, you know, drinking blood or drinking a different kind of blood or something. Well, perhaps we shan't need to know your really professor, because she tries to stop him. Ovaltine? Barnabas doesn't know what that is. What is that? Mr. Collins, says Professor Stokes, do you have a vitamin deficiency of some kind? Because that's the idea of selling Ovaltine, is that it's going to give you all these, like, nutrients and vitamins that you otherwise wouldn't get. And then they're still trying to decipher this thing from Willie Loomis and Stokes as well. Why that was in code is enough of a mystery. How about the basic prose? And then Barnabas says, yes, well, I already had Dr. Hoffman decipher it, so I can read it to you. Doctors are better equipped at deducing this griffinage than a layman, you know. And I believe part of that was inspired by one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, where Holmes says about his brother Mycroft, he writes like a drunken crab, and hands it to Watson and says, Watson, as a doctor, would be better at deciphering this kind of handwriting. So I kind of gave Dr. Hoffman that same ability that Holmes presumes Watson has automatically just by virtue of being a doctor, period. And so Barnabas had said, oh, so I can read it to you. And Stokes says, I wish you would. So he starts, I am getting Beamans every day. No, I am getting better every day. How are things at the house? I'm sorry I didn't get to the pipe on the wood stove, but the creosote was very thick and I couldn't find the right brush to get all the gunk off. So I figured, yeah, I have these ideas of finally getting some sort of kitchen working over the old house. And Stokes is curious, did he care about that work so much? And Barnabas admits, oh yes, you'd be surprised how much our Willie managed to get accomplished with all the other things going on at the time. Say hello to the doc for me. Oh hey, I did use doc! Okay. There was this thing between O'Sheen and I where Bill Malloy is calling Dr. Hoffman Doc, and I was like, oh, I wanted to use that. I was thinking about it. I was thinking about the ghost of Caleb Collins calling Dr. Hoffman Doc after various other things that she doesn't want to be nicknamed. But it's funny that in this letter from episode 5, you know, the Doc. So good. It's already kind of in there earlier. But, you know, me and O'Sheen, great minds think alike. So the letter continues, and please stay out of trouble. If you ever need another handyman, well, you know where I am. I guess I miss Collinwood, you could say. Willie. So, that's him signing it. And Professor Stokes continues with a few ideas, but he also asks, would you permit a presumption on my part in regards to Mr. Loomis? And after a little misunderstanding, Stokes points out, I mean calligraphy. Meaning handwriting calligraphy. Barnabas is incredulous. Calligraphy? Willie? Yes, Mr. Collins, you'd be surprised at the benefits and character that can be gleaned from the result of simple, good penmanship. Professor, I think you have something there. The address, please. Of course. So, that is actually a wonderful portion of focusing on letter writing and also the importance of penmanship that I really didn't know exactly how Stokes was going to be responsible for that quite yet. That came about in episode 14 when I figured it out. Because I just wanted to give something to do, and yeah, it does seem like a professor would be concerned after seeing this, you know, horrible handwriting by Willie Loomis. Maybe we should work on this aspect of this person. So even funnier, it really has very little to do with this episode in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, or just the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows generally, but during the dream sequence we're taking right out of Dance of the Dead from The Prisoner, a postman shows up at the prisoner's house, number 6. Special delivery, sign your number here, number 6. So that is in there, technically, yeah, that's a postman, a special delivery. So under the theme of letter writing and sending mail, yeah, that still counts. Now it looks like for episode 6, Coffee, Tea, and Cribbage, there's one instance of letter writing and mail upon Victoria and Peter running away from the Bates Motel. And as they're running away, Peter says, first, we have to stop and get gas. Then I've got this letter. They mentioned an empty room for rent. Paper fluttering. And Victoria, reading. Cemetery Lane. Peter, really? He says, it's all right. Keep reading. Westminster, California. We are responding to your entreaty. We have an enchanting room for rent at cutthroat prices. Your blood may be as fine as ours. Peter? He says, it's fine. What? We just had a man in drag come at us with a knife. Look at the names. This will be perfectly fine. Morticia and Gomez Adams. You know you're losing some credibility here, sweetheart. And he says, what's wrong? Adams. Perfectly respectable. All right, she says. Can't beat the places we've been so far, can it? Nope. Anywhere is normal compared to Collinsport. And then the finger-snapping theme to the Adams Family TV show. So, the Adams Family in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows starts with a letter. And then the theme music. At the end of episode 6. Now, in episode 7,
the Blair Warlock projected. The letter is mentioned once, but they never have to show the Adams family the letter itself. But Victoria was concerned that Peter have the letter on hand just in case there was any question. And Victoria explains to Peter, it's always good to arrive with an invitation, darling. Okay, in episode 7, the Blair Warlock projected, when Nicholas Blair shows up, he does mention letter writing. Because he's in there looking for Cassandra, his sister, quote-unquote. And he says, it is good to see Collinwood. Cassandra has written me so much about it. And then he gets introduced to Tony Peterson, and he says, you seem familiar. I think Cassandra mentioned you in her letters also. And Tony responds, oh no, that must be mixed up with someone else. And then, oh, this was wonderful. The second to last scene for the Blair Warlock projected episode 7 in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Professor Stokes expresses to Dr. Hoffman, because they're driving out to Wycliffe, that if Hoffman, are you sure he knows we're coming to see him? Meaning William Loomison. Stokes says, of course. I posted the letter 3 days ago. It shouldn't take any longer than that. Besides, you had to decipher his script to know he was eager to have a visitor. So with the letter being posted 3 days before and him being sure that it's there, I had one pen friend respond to that portion, this scene. Posted mail 3 days ago, and you expect it to have reached its destination already, Professor? These characters are clearly not Canadian. And then she says, yes, I realize there was better postal service back in the day. Stokes and Hoffman go on about it a bit more, because Stokes discusses with Julia, Doctor, it is part of Mr. Loomis's treatment, I think. And she's not sure. I'm still concerned about that one phrase. Couldn't figure out if it was a Q or an F. And he says, which is precisely why we're doing all this. That man must learn penmanship. But why penmanship? Well, he's got to have something. Something that communicates. What about, well, proper speech? Improve his vocabulary, that kind of thing? I'll approach that side of things, but in writing. And Hoffman presses the issue. Yes, but don't you think you should help with his manner of speaking before calligraphy? And Stokes says, it is my belief that to try and change that would be pushing him too far. The written word he's at least become curious about since he's had to perform more of it at Wycliffe. And then, of course, I gotta throw in the My Fair Lady stuff, because Hoffman's still going, I'm just suggesting, well, and he says, Doctor, and I do call you Dr. Hoffman, I am no Professor Higgins, but keep up this line of suggesting, meaning the proper speech thing, and I will be determined to call you Colonel Pickering. And she snickers, all right, all right. I must say, I'm losing my touch, if you could find that association before I did. Now, this is funny for episode 8, when Dr. Hoffman, Professor Stokes, and Willie Loomis meet at Wycliffe. Willie asks, do I know you? And Stokes responds, we have exchanged letters. And Hoffman says, oh, please allow me to introduce you, Willie Loomis, Professor Stokes. And Willie says, oh, pleased to meet you, I think. Likewise, Mr. Loomis, I've been looking forward to this. And that comes from Willie wondering, well, if we've exchanged letters, have we kind of met already? And then for the next encounter with the written word by mail, it is when Carolyn and Tony are encountering the ghost of Captain Gregg for the first time in episode 8 in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. And Tony and Carolyn are explaining to Sam Evans and Captain Gregg Nicholas Blair showing up in episode 7. And Carolyn says, he called himself Nicholas Blair. He was looking for Cassandra, claimed to have received letters about us and Collinwood. Of course, she's been missing. And it looks like in episode 9, there's no mention of it. There's just mostly telephone calls going on. So that moves us on to episode 10, The Kids Are All Right, which I thought they were when I put that together, but I found out, no, they're probably doing worse than they ever have before. Maybe. And for episode 10, the obvious big one, which is when the Better Homes and Gardens journalist arrives to inquire to Barnabas Collins about another magazine issue on the topic of his renovations. And this is interrupting a very important discussion that Barnabas is having with Maggie about these odd remembrances that she's been having. So he's not very happy. And the response from Barnabas when the journalist makes this inquiry is, this is not in any manner, fashion, or mirage, a convenient moment. And I actually got that from any way, shape, or form. I just changed everything around. Manner, fashion, or mirage. And the journalist reacts to that, oh, I apologize for that, but I had to call in person as you have no telephone. And Barnabas asks,
And did it ever occur to you that there might be a reason for that?
And this is the thing that when I would read this out of context to people, they would always laugh most at this. Eccentricity? I'm still blown away by that.
And Barnabas says, Bless us. Does no one write letters anymore? Oh, whoops. Say, don't you ever get tired of seeing that repetitive address on your envelopes? You know, Collins, Collinwood, Collinsport, Maine? And Barnabas, pointedly, That is the nice thing about the new zip codes. It's given me something to contemplate while I look through whose subscription I wish to cancel.
And one of the reasons that I put in stuff about the new zip codes is my pen pal Meredith had recently shown me something about how in the 60s they were kind of doing these song and dance advertisements for the new zip codes because it was going to make things like so much easier. And we've learned to live with them and be a little grateful for them, even with the extra 4 digits after the first 5. But yeah, that was something that let me know back in 2012, 2013, when I was getting this going. Yeah, zip codes were new. And we've seen evidence about that in fragments that we've collected over the years. There is something that we have freezer bags from way back, and there is no zip code, but it tells you if you want more of the freezer bags, just this package that we have, to send 50 cent in coin through the mail. I wonder if I've done that. I was saying to my husband, I think I might have. But yeah, there was no zip code. And then we found something from 66 recently, little labels about seasons of the year. And if you look really closely, I had to use a magnifying glass because it's so tiny. The labels say 1966 and they do have zip codes. So yeah, it was a new thing. And it was a great thing to make a joke about. And that also shows that Barnabas is acclimating to the 1960s. That's the nice thing about the new zip codes. It's given me something else to contemplate while I look through whose subscription I wish to cancel. Pointedly, he's saying this. And the journalist responds, Well, yes, we can definitely write you a letter with the details to this offer. He says, Do. Good day. And then we have a scene with Mr. Wells getting irritated at Nicholas Blair and all the demonic noises coming from his hotel suite, room 13. It just so happens. And after that, he meets up with Bob the bartender and Mildred Mayhem, which is an original character I made up. And at that point, after they have their discussion over this Nicholas Blair guy, Mr. Wells is wondering why Mildred has shown up in the first place. And she says, I've got the prints to pick out for the new postcards. And he says, Oh, good. That's the best news I've heard all day. Let's have a look at those. So there are Collinsport postcards that are going to be sold. Or maybe just Maine postcards. But yeah, she's got the prints. They're going to decide on to create and get printed the postcards for Collinsport, Maine, or things in Maine to be sold at the Collinsport Inn. So that has something to do with sending things by the mail and letter writing and all that. Fits the theme of this particular podcast show. So for episode 11, part 1, the only thing that really touches on that is Hoffman's dose talking about Willie Loomis practicing his penmanship. Hoffman asks, How is the patient? To Professor Stokes. And he says, You'd be surprised. I think Mr. Loomis is doing quite well, for a start. And she says, Oh, no. He's not still drawing practice strokes and spacing, is he? Stokes says, No. But he is working on the capital letters. I'd hope he would start with the smaller version of the cursive alphabet, but he is determined to stick to what he considers the basics. He should probably just practice with numbers, but if he has a mind to do it... Stokes says, Let him do it his way. I know. So that's good. Willie is coming a long way. Because he's interested. And that looks like... Yeah, that makes sense. Because episode 12 is all about the regression therapy for reincarnation. So... Oh, no! No. There is... Because that has to do with... Oh, gosh. Yeah, maybe we should go back to episode 11, actually. Because at the end of that is the check. And Barnabas fills that out for Sam Evans for doing the painting. Like, messing with the painting of Angelique so that Cassandra won't be a bother to them. And Sam tells Barnabas, Make the check payable to the Parapsychology Foundation, and could you write reincarnation research into the notes area of it? So he's taking the payment, and he's going to send it to the Parapsychology Foundation for reincarnation research. Thinking that Barnabas Collins knows what he's talking about, and he's just hiding it. which he's not. So, for episode 12, we get to the verbal brawl, or anchor sequence between Captain Greg and Sam Evans, reincarnation of André Dupré. And Captain Greg sees the check from the end of episode 11 that Barnabas Collins has given to Sam Evans for reincarnation research to give to the Parapsychology Foundation, which I do believe is a real place, a real foundation. So Greg points out in episode 12, if nothing else, at least you can do some good with what you've earned for that painting. And Sam is thinking about that because his mind is full of Barnabas Collins kidnapped his daughter, and I don't want to help him in any potential whatsoever. So he stomps over saying, destroy that thing. And Captain Greg stops Sam from doing that in episode 12. And he says, belay that action, sir. You and I went through a lot together, just so this booty could reach you. Don't you dare throw it away. And he says, pick up your hand and let me have that. How can I accept it from him, even to give it away as a charitable donation? And Greg tells him, because you almost died again, meaning Angelique was going to kill him until Greg showed up. And this incident brought us back together somehow. I may never have known you once more if your memories hadn't been unlocked already, physical and spiritual. That anger, because it gave him the regression to André Dupré, Sam Evans getting angry, gave you something unique of most mortal men, André Dupré, Sam Evans, so go ahead and be angry. And Sam's angry. Well, I sure am. But I can't do it, meaning send the check. I won't. You hear me? You spook. Meaning he's kind of, you know, name-calling Captain Greg to push him away because he's angry. Trying to push him away, dismiss him. You're just a spook. A ghost. And Greg is crazy angry, and he screams, mail the check, André. Which, man, I practice that a lot. And Sam, still angry, why don't you do it if you're so hot about it? The envelope is already filled out and stamped anyway. And sounds of paper rustling. Now Greg has come back from wherever Andorra threw him, so he's all wet, and he has not been that wet in ages. Because how can anyone drench a ghost? But a witch, like Andorra, can, somehow. And Greg says, don't ask me how I sealed the envelope. And Sam says, no, your clothes are probably still damp enough. You could use your shirt sleeve. You go ahead without me. And Greg is determined, oh no, Dupré. None of that. You need a blasted walk. And so everything that they're talking about is on the way to the mailbox. And so it fits in with the theme of letter writing and sending things by post. Then, of course, I did go and get sound effects for a specific mailbox that has currently been pulled from the street. It was a while ago, and for all posterity, it is in the podcast in episode 12. And as they get there, Sam says, well, here it is, meaning the blue box, the mailbox. And Greg says, go ahead and do it. Put that money where your actions have been. One small little piece to anyone who might be going through what you've been going through. Because the check is going to the Parapsychology Foundation for reincarnation research. And Sam says, I can't touch the handle, Daniel. I just can't. And Greg says, then allow me. And he kind of waves his hand. And you hear the mailbox opening, squeaking. And then you hear a flitter of the envelope going in. And then the door closes, slam. And Greg tells Sam, remember, I may have opened it for you, but you mailed it. Now we can have that drink. So even episode 12, we've got some sending in the mail. It was the check, it wasn't the letter, but yeah, I mean, it was a donation. Presumably Sam added something to that, because he had already put everything together before Greg did another part of the job for him, and then they walked to the mailbox and set the damn thing. And interestingly enough, there doesn't seem to be anything on the topic of letter writing or sending mail in episode 13. Well, maybe not. Surprising.
There's a lot of other stuff going on in episode 13.
However, for episode 14, Reunion at the Old House, there's quite a bit of the letter writing and sending mail in there, that topic. So the first mention of the mail in episode 14 was as Sam and Barnabas, Sam's revealing that he is the reincarnation of André Dupré to Barnabas, and Barnabas says, so you're not angry? Sam says, oh, I admit I was enraged for a good half hour. I was ready to come over here and strangle you with my bare hands. Why didn't you? I would have deserved it. Good to hear you say that, says Sam. It was an interesting argument to have with oneself. We all do it, but in this case, there was a lot of understanding between such long stretches of time.
As Maggie says, different days, different ways. Slavery was still legal, transportation was plodding, and who was really getting all their mail? Well, I guess you could ask that now, too. So, yeah, he's, Sam, as Andre, is noticing the differences and similarity in the mail between the 1790s and our current times. And the mail is mentioned again as Stokes is driving Hoffman to Wincliffe. Also, you might check your files and mail at Wincliffe. You could find out how much important work you have accomplished and can go on accomplishing without agonizing so much over Collingwood. And then for penmanship, we go back over to the topic of Willie Loomis. Hoffman points out, well, I suppose, what with your clever idea of giving Willie Loomis more to do than build jigsaw puzzles at that place, I have something to believe about you as well in that regard. How did you come up with that? And Stokes says, a staggering amount of time grading papers. I noticed the less confident students improve in other things, along with penmanship, when they acquired the skill. And I noticed that too, a lot of pen pals, I'm sorry, this is so sloppy, etc., etc. However, with Willie Loomis, I think the practice could eventually lead into more design work. Oh, what kind of design work? Asks Hoffman. That is the question, isn't it? I'm not sure if the tales are true, but I have a feeling he's got a penchant for jewelry. Yes, all right. I know. Express your mirth. No need to withhold it. But if he was designing it instead of desiring it, he could be around it all the time in that position. And that's the thing that Stokes knows, is that if we work on his penmanship, other things could become enhanced, including a penchant for jewelry or designing jewelry. And then, also in episode 14, we have the six people in a room, Sam, Barnabas, Maggie, Willie Wadsworth, Dr. Hoffman, in her office. At some point, Hoffman expresses bemused confusion. Well, such a party in my office. I'd look through my mail if I could reach it between all of you. And then Maggie sets to in reaching for her mail and reading it to her. Ah, I see. Well, I can tell you about this pile. A few unopened holiday cards from last year and that magazine issue about the old house. That must have been here a while. And a penny saver. Bureau of Medical Economics. Hoffman, mild annoyance. Nice touch, Miss Evans. Are you going to open and read everything to us after all I've done for the crew around here? And then, oh, we get the good one. I remember putting up a synopsis of this back in 2013. And then Roger and Elizabeth have a pleasant chat while opening the mail after and express stuff about this confrontation scene in episode 14 between Willie and Barnabas. And then Elizabeth and Roger have a pleasant chat while opening the mail, which is one of my absolute favorite scenes. So it's like totally about the mail with this scene. So they're sitting there. Well, Liz, I think this piece is for you. Likely an updated passport. Thank you, Roger. And she's tearing it open. You know, your more relaxed attitude has made some distinct changes around here, and likely ones you didn't even know about. And Roger confesses that he's kind of calmed down, and perhaps some unbelievable events for the better could be welcomed. However much so many smiling faces can remind me of advertisements. And we go on to the next thing that Elizabeth tears open. Indeed, paper rustling. Oh, speaking of smiles, because she's looking at her new passport. I'm guessing I didn't give much of one in this photo. Why must these pictures always have to turn out so unflattering? I see what you mean, says Roger. I'm sure part of it was the hurry you were in to get it done. Passports are, by nature, rare to acquire easily, and expedited ones doubly so. And she says, huh, true. And the last thing in the mail that arrives for Roger. Oh, here's a larger envelope. And as he opens it, he says, ah, isn't that to cherish? What? Asks his sister Elizabeth. It's finally come. My annulment has been verified. So that's all done. So with episode 15, A Blundering Succubus, there is a little bit of mail mentioned, at least for this part, where Vampire Angelique comes to the door to try to get a drink out of Roger, and he believes that she is still Cassandra and has dyed her hair blonde, and she claims, oh, how I've missed you, my dear, and he says, uh-huh, not even a postcard, eh? And she says, oh, from where I've been, I wasn't sure where to find one. So she was in the underworld, so you don't quite know where to get a postcard to send to
somebody in the not underworld.
It also looks like we don't have anything in the theme for episode 16, Death in the Family. Should have something for episode 17. And so for episode 17, we've got the scene after Wadsworth talks to Willie. Sarah comes in and Willie asks, "What you here for, little girl?" And she says, "I wanted to see how your letters were coming along, Willie." "That's right. You know more about this penmanship business than anyone might give you credit for. Come on." And he sits her down on his lap to see what he's doing. And she asks, "What do you have, Willie?" He responds, "Wadsworth just brought this to me, you see? You see what this pen is made of?" She says, "It's glass. A glass pen." "That's right, Angel. I was surprised, too. I've never seen one like this before. It's so pretty." He says, "Just like you." And she says, admonishing, "Willie." "I can't help it, Sarah. I calls him like I sees him." And she says, "All right. Have you been practicing?" "Yeah, want to tell me that poem to practice with?" Which is the one that Barnabas told to Sarah, that she referred back to him as a ghost. "That evil is wicked is well understood. The wicked are punished, so you must be good." He says, "All right." And you hear him scribbling, which is actually me scribbling with a glass pen. And he asks, "How's that?" She says, "That's right. But it wouldn't hurt to write it again, Willie." And he says, "As you wish." Which, some of you might know, is a very famous line from The Princess Bride. "As you wish." So in episode 18, there is a little bit during the indoor badminton game between Victoria Gomez, Peter, and Morticia. And as they're playing, Victoria says, "I hope I get an answer to that letter soon. David Collins can be a handful or two. I'd like to know he's improved by his new governess." And Morticia responds, "Of course you would." Oh, yeah, in the end of episode 18, when Sam's inquiring to Mr. Wells about whatever gossip is around, and Wells says, "Oh, Millie." And Sam's asking about Mildred Mayhem, and he says, "Oh, Millie? Well, have I got a story for you. You know about those postcards?" "Oh, do tell," Sam says, sipping his coffee. And Wells says, "Ah, seems that the printing press that Mildred caters to had some questionable business with," and then we trail that off for gossip that I have not figured out what to do with. Now in episode 19, Happier in Hell, one of the first scenes is Roger and Carolyn, and he asks her, "Had you checked the mail?" And she says, "No, Uncle Roger." "Well, I did. You just received this letter from Schooner Bay, a Mrs. Carolyn Muir." And Carolyn takes the letter. "Oh." And Roger says, "Please tell me there is something fun involved." And Carolyn says, "Oh, I'm not sure. She wants me to come and see her." "Ah, and why not? Your mother abandoned the whole estate to you, to me, and to Cousin Barnabas. The further we deplete the household populace, the quieter this place will become."
"Uncle Roger, I'm not sure, but it appears my mother contacted Mrs. Muir prior to her trip."
"Oh?"
"Yes, it sounds as if there is more I needed to find out, and Mrs. Muir knows about that."
Folding paper.
"I should go and see her."
And eventually Roger asks, "Do you need a car to go out to Schooner Bay, kitten?" And she snickers.
"Yes, Uncle Roger, I most decidedly do."
And then Carolyn goes to Schooner Bay and lets Mrs. Muir know.
"Yes, I got your letter."
Because Mrs. Muir is revealing to Carolyn the things that Elizabeth Stoddard told her. So in this way, we see that the Postal Service has still a very big impact in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Even the Samantha and Adora scene for episode 19, Samantha's like, "I gotta write this down," so that kind of counts too. It looks like we don't have anything for episode 20. Ah, there is a little bit in episode 21 where Bill expresses, but I reckon that sound too much like a line from a Hallmark card, which was definitely Oisin. She suggested that, and I was not gonna about to put it in, but then I said, "Yeah, I will," and she's all, "Oh, I'm so touched." And Elizabeth tells Bill, "Hallmark card or not, Bill, I thank you for saying it." And he says, "You're welcome, Liz." Wow, looks like that is about it for all of the postcard mailings, letter writing, pen pal stuff in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I hope you've enjoyed this. Let's see if there's anything else I want to talk about. So now that we're done with the theme, I guess I'll get to a little news. Oisin Navoy has her In Darkness fan work up, 10 chapters strong, that I have been reviewing as faithfully as possible, and am really enjoying, especially that 10th chapter.
because, as you know, in at least one of her interviews, restoring Angelique to the role of Move Past Barnabas and carrying on with her own life and being a badass, which was really great. The 10th chapter, I could not put it down. And that's rare for me, because, as some of you know, I do have focusing problems, which is why I held on to the pit so strongly. And, yeah, it's really good. Chapter 10, which is now up, she sent it to me previously, and, oh, so good. Also, she was helping me out with a little bit of the bits in episode 23 when I put the demo up, and going, yeah, I remember sliding down the stairs. I know what Roger was talking about, because I used to do that with my mom's sleeping bag pad. And for me, I used a pillowcase, you know, when I was a kid. And so, yeah, we both know what that means. And another pen pal, she was like, oh, we were so much more hardcore with what Roger was doing. We didn't even have carpeted stairs. They were just hardwood. So if anyone understands what was going on at the end of the demo of episode 23, yeah, that's what that was. So there is that, and I haven't worked too much on 23 or 24, barely anything at all. I'm still just catching up with the mail and catching up with friends and pen friends and that kind of thing, which I really appreciate if you are one of them. Just letting you know, you caught me out of the madness, and that was the whole point of going to a lot of the pen pal sites, and I knew that it would pull me out because I had that training from the 80s and the 90s to make that more important. So there is In Darkness by Oisin Nivoy at fanfiction.net and presumably Archive of Our Own. I'm not sure. I haven't checked. So yeah, chapter 10 is a doozy. It's just, it's so wonderful. And Willie is a big component in that one too. And I let her know I could not put it down. And that's rare for me. Also, for myself, there is chapter 46 of Margaret Chaussette Dupré, which is called My Lady of Dreams Weeps Not, and it's one of those slow ones that I decided just let it go, because a couple of the people who are interested, maybe a few people who are interested, maybe more than two, it's something I will send to them on paper, and they'll respond on paper, so that's fine. I just wanted to do something. And I had had that sitting there for a year or two. And I just thought, yeah, now's the time. And I'm going to try to bring Maggie, as just said, calling Barnabas Mondamon into the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows someday. I'm not sure when. But this is way later in the day. This is the aftermath in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows for Margaret Chaussette Dupré. And he comes up with a term of endearment for her, because he wanted to make sure he was going to pronounce it right in her foreign tongue. And I'm not going to do it right, but this is it. Mon ange. My angel. So, in chapter 46, My Lady of Dreams Weeps Not, under a Margaret Chaussette Dupré, that's what he comes up with. And she's surprised because he managed, even though they have this telepathic link, he's managed to keep it from her. He's managed to keep that idea from her. But it's not something that she's too surprised by, because overall, he's starting to process what a reluctant vampire is and what it means in terms of humanity. He's starting to recognize a lot of the metaphors that those of us who love vampires and understand what they mean, he's starting to understand that. And the funny thing is that I also understand. It's like Barnabas is catching up with me, but I'm catching up with Josette, because she would naturally understand all of this a lot sooner than either of us, me or Barnabas. So that is what that chapter has in store for you if you are interested. And the other thing, it was nice that Helena and Oisin focused on, it's about the room too. It's very much about the room and how they put it together through their letters and what those furnishings mean in Josette's bedroom, and how they worked that out over time. And so other than that, it's just getting cozy together, you know, unclothed, as per usual, and just thinking about all these things. And there's not a lot going on as far as, you know, adventure in the novel, because it's just focused on their love and their presence and what it means to them. That's what the novel's really about. It's just, it's a, like I said, marriage novel. It's a wonderful description of it. And so other things are happening that we don't see. It's just that the novel is focused on the two of them most of the time. So yeah, if you're interested in that, I'd love to know what you enjoyed. And hopefully I could get to another podcast about the marriage novel soon. It's just 17. It's like, I don't know what to say about that most of the time.
But now that we've gone down that road, I figure I can give some thanks to Humane Tech. Because they have been helping me discover why things went so horribly in my 21st century life. Even furthermore, why it had been so rotten in my 20th century life, too. Because, yeah, if you listen to Your Undivided Attention, I highly recommend going from the first one, not necessarily the precursor, but like the first one and on up through. It's like taking a class about your entire life and about why your entire life formed the way it did. As well as this 21st century oblivion we're all living in. But yeah, it really has helped, and I need to send them another thank you card. I already did for the Opposite of Addiction show. I was listening to that again, and so true. So opened my eyes to so many things, and there's a lot of stuff in that show, Your Undivided Attention, that just tells you everything about what's going on now and what happened previously. If you're wondering about your life, yeah, it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. I'm so happy to have it. It's like, so much of the time I'd get so irritated. No, well, there's nothing on TV. Have you tried PBS? And I'd go back to PBS and I'd be like so shocked. Like, yeah, you know, the pledge breaks are pretty annoying. But at the same time, maybe that's better than commercials. Maybe that's better than all these ads trying to get your attention and make you repeat stuff and sing songs that are really not worth singing. I gotta send them another thank you card. Really, humanetech.com. Oh, so glad they're there. And I was looking for them. I was looking for them for years. Looking for something like that for years. Finally got it. So I don't know what to tell you now. I'm just trying to get this done. See if I can get it done before Valentine's Day, which would be the anniversary on fanfiction.net of The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. February 14th, 2012, which was before the movie, which was a great movie. I still enjoy that movie. It's really funny. I was telling my auntie, a lot of the hate is manufactured. She's like, really? Well, I mean, a lot of just hate in general right now is manufactured. You get a lot of dopamine rush because you get all these like buttons that you interpret as approval, but it's just all BS. And people get knocked into this wind of just saying the worst thing ever, and they get approval, so the next thing out of their mouth, if the topic comes up, is, that was horrible, it was da-da-da-da-da, and then you bring in a story component, or you bring in a joke, and they love it. So it's not real, you know, the hate is not real, it's manufactured. And yeah, she was pretty fascinated by that. I was like, yeah, the hate for Dark Shadows 2012, most of it, is extremely manufactured, just as is a lot of the hate for me. And it's really sad, too, because I'm sure there's tons of people younger than I am who love The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, but they are so hotwired to hate speak for rewards that they don't even know how to contact me. They don't know how to talk about it. They don't know how to enjoy anything. It's hate speak for rewards. So the only thing they even know how to say, and I've seen this with certain pen pals that I had to give up, just saying the worst thing or saying change this, change that, because that's all they know. They don't know how to talk about what they like. They don't know how to follow narrative. So that's it. I can't even, it gets to the point where I can't blame all y'all. You were under something far worse than I had to go through in the 20th century. And it's just awful. Like, so you got two ways of dealing with this. You feel guilty for making mistakes, or you feel like none of it was your fault because somebody tricked you and manipulated you. What's the better choice? I think the guilt is the better choice, frankly. It doesn't have to be heavy guilt, but just understanding what happened. For me, it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of getting tricked, a little bit of guilt. Wish I could have seen through it, but what can you do? So, that is the deal here. However, I wanted to leave off at the end here something for the pen friends and friends that are still in touch to let you know why you've been so helpful. It's because long-term narrative is the key. A lot of you read books, and you can talk about those books, like the... You can talk about the whole book. There is, I've discovered, fan work still made, based on old books, right now. And when you see the discussion for those fan work based on old books, it's like this last decade never happened. Readers are still doing lengthy discussion, four chapters, usually each chapter, following the narrative, and a ton are doing the same for those fan works that you've been doing for The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. It's true. I go to those fan works for old books, and it looks the same as the letters you've written me about episodes in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. It's incredible. It's fantastic. It's like nothing happened. And the 20th century practices are still going strong. And, you know, I think it's just being able to hold long-term narratives. You've got it, my friends. My pen friends. My phone friends. You've got it. You're able to talk about the story. You're not sitting there nitpicking like a factory worker. Talking about what you enjoy. You're talking about what happened in the story. It's the same. It's just wonderful. So, I wanted to leave that with everyone before I sign off here. Thank you. I will, as usual, leave you a way to contact me. My email address, xoiscythe@hotmail.com. And I hope this is good enough for an anniversary show after putting together at least 8 years in The Bed of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Take care.
The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is a Daryl War production.